A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 88. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And today we are talking about Crime Traveller. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Crime Traveller, which asks us the question, what if you actually had a time machine that would take you back in time? How would you use it? And in particular, would you use it to solve or even try and prevent crimes? Which is the basic premise of this show we're going to be talking about.
Absolutely. This was a 1997 BBC series that ran for one season, eight episodes that were about 50 minutes long each. And it combined time travel with a sort of standard TV police mystery kind of format with a sort of whodunit feel and figuring out what happened in these crimes and how they were committed.
That's right, and they have a lot of fun along the way with time travel and with the rules of time travel, which are established in the show. And then, of course, whenever we consider time travel in science fiction, we start to think about paradoxes. And the creators of the show have quite a lot of fun with that along the way. And as you say, it brings in this TV police mystery format and mixes it all up. So quite a fun show to discuss this time, Brian.
Absolutely, that's right. And they certainly get into a lot of those things quite a bit. So getting into the setup, the show begins with Detective Jeff Slade, who is a tough, no-nonsense detective. And he very quickly teams up with a police science officer, a woman, who has a time machine in secret that was designed by her father, and she has continued his work with this time machine.
And together, these two will travel back in time and crack some of the toughest cases that this detective has on his books. And as we've said, get into all sorts of trouble with the various rules and paradoxes that time travel can create.
And of course, their co-workers don't know that they have this time machine. So they're also having to tell their coworkers how they were able to solve these and sort of fill things in without admitting that they're actually traveling through time.
Which produces its own complications for them along the way, often having to explain how they could appear to have been in two places at once, Brian.
Yes, and of course there is some humor in there based on that as well.
So we've got these eight episodes of about 50 minutes each, as you say, Brian, and they're all standalone stories. They're all basically murder mysteries, but they have, as we say, this science fiction twist of time travel and the problems that the time machine itself creates, which we'll talk about more as we go along. There's one or two linking themes that run through the series, but pretty much the stories can be seen as one and done shows, I think, Brian.
Yes, they're pretty interchangeable. There are a few things that run thematically through the series, but you don't really have story arcs building across the run.
So as we say, eight episodes, and our characters, which we've already started to get into, we have this tough, no-nonsense detective, Jeff Slade, who was played by Michael French, at the time best known in British TV for the long-running soap opera EastEnders. And he's the lead detective in this criminal investigation unit. And he's a rather unusual detective for British TV, particularly so because he carries a handgun, which, of course, is still quite rare for British police. And he's also quite an action-adventure type hero because he's prone to clambering around on ledges and rooftops and dangling from various precipices and generally getting himself into all sorts of scrapes as he goes along, Brian.
Yes, he is a bit of a bull in a china shop. He sort of pushes the issue and sort of runs around and gets into all sorts of mischief, sometimes not with the boss's approval.
Yes, that's right. Not always with his superiors' blessing.
Now, the other central character is Holly Turner, played by Chloe Annette, who was in Red Dwarf and the later seasons of Red Dwarf. She played Kashansky. And Holly Turner is this young police forensics officer who is a scientist and a science officer with the police, but she is also accomplished as a physicist and is working with this project of her father's time machine. Her father developed this time machine, and she's the only one who understands it and is able to maintain it and continue to use it. So she is running with that project, and of course she reveals it to Slade in the first episode, but the two of them are the only ones who know about it.
And this is Chloe Annette at pretty much the same time as she appeared in Red Dwarf, I think, Brian. Pretty much the same year.
That's about right. It's very close.
Yeah. And she's playing it quite straight here, I think. She's quite serious and scientific, which is how her character is written, and not quite the sort of light-hearted and sarcastic character, Kachansky, that she played over in Red Dwarf.
That's right.
And we'll talk about that perhaps as we go along as well. We've got their boss, who was a character called Kate Grisham, played by another very recognisable British TV actor, Sue Johnston, who is perhaps best known at the moment for playing the psychologist in another long-running police show called Waking the Dead. And she's Slade and Turner's direct boss in this criminal investigation unit. And as we've said, she often has to carpet them for their slightly odd behaviours, particularly Slade's reckless behaviour. And that's fairly typical, I suppose, conventional police drama, with the boss having to shout at the detective while knowing at the same time that they're probably going to crack the case by the end of the episode.
Yes, and she does that very well. You get the sense that she's not just shouting for the sake of shouting, that she really is aggravated, and there's that sense of emotion behind it. And there is a bit of range there, too. So she does sort of pull off a good character there.
Yeah, Sue Johnson's a cracking actress, and, you know, as I say, loads of British TV work. Very well regarded, and as you say, she does very well in this role.
We also have Morris, played by Paul Tressel, who is the conventional slow-witted cop, and this guy really doesn't know what's going on. He sort of follows along with the team, but he is the stereotypical clueless, unintelligent character, and it's played for a certain amount of comedy, but played quite straight with that sort of deadpan approach. Again, sort of rounds out the group of the team there quite well. It's another quite entertaining character.
Yeah, as you say, often used for a bit of comic relief, often confused by Slade and Turner appearing to be in two places at once. And I think in one of the later episodes, he's actually told by Grisham to try and find out how Slade is solving so many crimes, and has to tail Slade for a while, and that produces more room for confusion and humour, doesn't it, Brian?
Yes, it does. That was quite amusing.
To finish off our police team, we have a character called Robson, played by a young actor called Richard Dempsey, and he's a young graduate police detective. He's very bright, but he's also very naive. And again, that sort of young innocent is used for comic relief here and there. But he can fill in bits of knowledge from time to time, particularly about the art world and other very sort of pricey crimes that go on as the series progresses.
Yes, he knows his police rule book very well.
Yes, he's very good on the books and very good on the rules. He just seems to be a bit wide-eyed and innocent sometimes when they're actually out there trying to solve crimes.
And that grouping that they build up with Morris, Robson, Grisham, and a few others, this sort of team that surrounds the two main characters, builds up a pretty solid set of regular characters in the non-science fiction standard police drama tradition. And it was done sort of seriously in a way that would work for a police drama, and worked pretty well to give it that backing.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the conventions of the police drama, which are quite nicely done, particularly, as we say, with Grisham having to shout at various characters in order to get results. But it all works quite well, and, you know, as a police procedural, not bad at all as they go along.
That's right.
Is this it?
Yes.
Looks like a...
Oh, spare me the inane comparisons, please.
far will it send me back?
No way of saying. It could be a few hours, could be a week.
A week? How will I get back again?
You wait 7 days. Simple as that. You just live the same 7 days twice.
Do I get to meet myself?
Not unless you want to cause a temporal schism.
Oh dear, I don't want that. What else do I need to know?
We have to be back at the machine at the same moment, and I mean the same half second that we left.
Now, of course, as in any time travel show, you have to get the rules of time travel and the paradoxes and how paradoxes play out and all of these things that are the nature of time travel in a particular show. And in this case, in Crime Traveler, you can only travel back in time, not forward, and you go back a random number of hours. And in effect, you end up living through the same span of time twice.
Yes, that's right. Turner and Slade, when they activate the time machine, as you say, it's a random period of time they're thrown back. And then they have to relive that time. They can't travel forward. So they have to relive the time. And then most importantly, they have to be back at the time machine when time catches up. And if the deadline was missed, then it could be disastrous, because we learn in the first episode that if you're not back at the time machine when your time travel catches up with real time, then you will be trapped in something called a loop of infinity. And we learn that Holly's father, that happened to him, which is why he's no longer on the scene, but he's just left his time machine for her to continue his experiments.
That's right.
And there's particular, you know, suspense introduced by them having to be back at the machine for the crucial time.
Yes, and that's something that, of course, is a part of basically every episode. And Holly has this large wristwatch-like device that's a timer that she wears on her wrist that tells them when the deadline is, so they can know to be back at the machine before that runs out. The period of time that they go back in time varies from one instance to another, but it seems to have its maximum at something like a day or two. They're never going far back in time. They're usually going a few hours back in time, sometimes a day or a little more than a day back in time. And of course, we also get the idea of paradoxes, and in particular, the idea that they can't meet their past selves. So if they go back in time and there are now two Turners and two Slades running around, they can't encounter each other, or there will be dire consequences.
And again, the show goes to quite considerable lengths to try and, you know, put them in situations where they might meet each other, and then they have to try and avoid that. And that adds to the suspense which is generated by the time machine and, as you say, Holly's wrist device, which has to get them back to the time machine at the right moment, so that you get a sort of ticking clock as well, which adds to the ongoing suspense of each episode. And then, of course, we're also told, Holly makes it quite clear to Slade that they cannot alter the past, that they can only observe it. That's one of the rules laid out in the first episode, but Slade ignores that rule for the most part and tries his hardest on several occasions to alter the past, or in fact to alter the future, I suppose. And that, again, that conflict between Slade and the rules provides further episodes of suspense and drama for each episode.
Yes, it always ends up working out the way that it did before. In fact, the way they do it is that you can have an impact on the past, but that impact will be evident even before you travel. There are situations where before they go back in time, someone will say, "Oh, I saw you, Slade, already." And then, of course, when they go back in time, it's when they see Slade that is the time that they had already mentioned. Or there will be something where there was an event that they changed something, but they didn't in fact change it because the thing they did was already always there. So there is sort of changing the past, and that you can have an impact on the past, but the impact will have always been there, even though you haven't traveled yet.
You see, whenever we start to talk about time travel in any science fiction context, it always gets a little hard on the head, doesn't it, Brian?
Yes.
It makes my brain hurt somewhat trying to think about all these paradoxes and the stuff that always was going to happen.
It will have been going to be happening. Yeah.
That's right. As Douglas Adams said in The Hitchhiker's Guide, the worst thing about time travel is the tenses.
Yes.
And of course, we have this one great paradox for the show itself, in that if you've got a murder mystery show, if Slade and Turner go back in time and witness the murder and see who did it, then that might make for a rather short episode. So they have to go to some lengths, Brian, to avoid that, I think.
Yes, every time they go back in time, there is always some reason that they can't actually witness the murder. They can always go back and see things before the murder, and they can collect lots of extra clues. But there is always something that stops them from actually witnessing the murder. So that is a little contrived, but it does sort of work.
And it allows the show creators to give us a sort of conventional murder mystery. So there'll be clues and there'll be suspects, and Turner and Slade will have to work out who actually did it at the same time as we're trying to work out who did it and how they did it as well.
Yes, that's right.
So we always like to talk about the production of the actual programmes we're considering. And so we have, for Crime Traveller, we have Anthony Horowitz, who is a very successful writer, particularly for TV, but he's also written for film and he's written a lot of books. On television here, he's perhaps best known for writing for The Poirot Show, but he's also written for other long-running police procedurals like Rosemary and Thyme and The Midsomer Murders. He also has written a series of very successful children's books, in particular the Alex Rider series of books, one of which was filmed as Stormbreaker, I believe.
Oh, yes.
So he's the writer on the show.
And he came up with this idea of a time-traveling detective show while he was working on one of the Poirot episodes. Now, I guess he decided not to include the time travel in the Poirot episode, which perhaps is too bad, but I guess some people don't like to have time travel mixed into their Agatha Christie for some reason.
We can see why, although it has happened once, but that would be over in Doctor Who.
Yes, that's true. So he discussed this idea with Brian Eastman, who was with the Carnival production company that would go on to make October with a K, about a year later.
And obviously Brian Eastman liked the idea, because between them they made a proposal to the BBC for this show called Crime Traveller, and the BBC obviously liked the pitch because they snapped it up as a potential Saturday night family TV show. All 8 episodes were written by Anthony Horowitz.
And they had a couple of different directors. Brian Farnham directed 4 of them, and Richard Stroud directed the other 4, both of them being established directors on TV cop shows, which I think had a lot of impact in making this sort of work as a cop show and have, you know, the other characters we talked about in the police station there sort of fitting that genre and being sort of a well-working team for that.
Yes, I mean, clearly, as you say, they've got some experience with this sort of police mystery stuff, and that shows in the direction of Crime Traveller. Then for the cast, their big success was luring Michael French away from EastEnders. As I say, at the time, he was very popular on the show as a sort of playing this lovable rogue character. But he did want to leave EastEnders, so they managed to get him to come over to do this in Crime Traveller. And then, as we say, Chloe Annette, probably not so well known at the time, because she was just about to start appearing in Red Dwarf when Crime Traveller was being produced, I think, Brian.
Yes, they may have actually produced this before she did the Red Dwarf episodes. I'm not sure about that. It's pretty close.
Yeah.
And they went with quite limited special effects, which was nice. It worked quite well. They built this very complex-looking time machine with, it's been called a bit of a Rube Goldberg machine or a Heath Robinson machine. But it was this machine with lots of sort of cobbled together bits of electronics and, you know, old looking things that looked like they came from the 1970s or 1960s cobbled together. And this was their big sort of science fiction visual piece, and the actual time travel, the effects were basically just done with some lighting. There would be, you know, lights running up and down the walls and that kind of thing.
The time machine's great. I mean, as you say, it's cobbled together from bits and pieces. This is not a swish efficient looking machine. It's something that's held together with bits of wire and all sorts of gadgets sort of bolted on, it seems, Brian.
Yes, and Holly Turner is constantly replacing diodes and rewiring things and so on.
Yeah, she's always having to tinker and fix it. And I suppose the other, only other effect is this gadget that she wears on her wrist to remind them when they have to be back in her time machine room in order to catch up with real time. And as we've said, that countdown watch provides further elements of suspense for each episode as we know the clock is ticking.
Yes, it's basically just a countdown timer that she plugs into the time machine and then carries around on her wrist when they're actually traveling.
And so the show went out in 1997, broadcast between March and April at an 8 p.m. slot on a Saturday night, and did very well. Good viewing figures, fairly well received on the BBC, so a reasonably popular show at the time.
And that 8 weeks in a row, and then that was that. And it had some mixed reviews from the critics, but I think when it first went out, it did actually do pretty well.
Yeah.
Found the dead body yet, Morris? I'll give you a clue. It's the one that isn't breathing.
Nice of you to show up, Slade.
Morning, Chief.
You're late.
Not as late as him. What's happened?
Time of death was about 10 o'clock last night. Shot in the back of the head while he was working. Probably didn't hear anything.
Any signs of forced entry?
Nope. Nope, front door was locked. Garden door was open. Through there.
Hmm. So whoever it was could have come in from there and...
Exactly.
So I think that brings things to the end for the first half of our discussion on Crime Traveler. Next time, we will look at some of the individual stories and go into some of the complexities of time travel a little bit more.
We'll also talk a bit more about the reaction to the show, and in particular, we'll get to why there were only 8 episodes made. Plus, of course, we always like to get to our own reviews and our recommendations about this series.
Absolutely. So that should be good, and please join us again. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. We look forward to having you back next time for more time-traveling fun. Until then, it's Eamon in England saying goodbye.